Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today for military enthusiasts, this week's 37th annual Findlay Show and Armed Forces Day celebration at the Hancock County Fairgrounds is an event not to be missed. We'll get a preview. Also this morning in our community and business spotlight, the United Way of Hancock County's recent Spring Days of Caring event is aimed not only at helping local nonprofit organizations complete much-needed projects, but also fostering involvement and engagement in the community. And in today's Throwback Thursday segment, don't look now, but the meme stock frenzy returned briefly this week. From the very beginning, though, it was a far cry from the revolution it was supposed to be. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, May 16th, 2024. So yesterday, the NFL released its full entire schedule for the upcoming season. Some interesting games on the schedule. The Bengals will open up the season at home against the Patriots on Sunday, September 8th. They will then head to Kansas City in week two to face the defending champions. They have a number of primetime games. One of the big marquee games for Cincinnati will be Monday Night Football Week 14 when the Bengals visit the Cowboys. That'll be December 9th. Browns open the season against Dallas at home. They also will host the Chiefs Week 15, December 15th. So a couple of really big games for Cleveland. They get the luxury of staying at home for. The Browns have a Sunday night football showdown at home again against the Dolphins. This is one of the marquee games for Cleveland. They will host the Dolphins week number 17, December 29th. Although a bit of an asterisk on that, you get into those latter weeks and the whole flex scheduling thing comes into play. If that game doesn't mean anything, it could be flexed out of the Sunday night time slot and into the afternoon window for a more important game at that point. But assuming that the Browns and Dolphins are still in the hunt, which they should be according to the projections, that would be Sunday night football's game on week 17. So some big stuff there. And by the way, it's not just the NFL making football news with respect to the schedule. Ohio State now, I guess, is going to be playing a rather interesting game on November 16th. The Buckeyes are scheduled to play on the road against Northwestern, and that game will now be played at one of the most iconic sports venues, not only in America, but in the world, Wrigley Field. Ohio State Northwestern will be at Wrigley Field November 16th, home of the Cubs, the second oldest park in Major League Baseball after Fenway Park in Boston. And the reason why they're playing this game at Wrigley is that Northwestern does not have a home field this season. Ryan Field is getting rebuilt and revamped, so it will not be available, I guess, either this season or next. So I don't know if Northwestern is playing all their games at Wrigley Field or if they're going to rotate around to different venues. But for the Wildcats-Buckeyes game on November 16th, it'll be at Wrigley Field in Chicago. It's actually pretty cool. Let's see. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, Quest Diagnostics has a new report out that finds there has been a huge increase in the number of swapped drug tests in 2023. The implication is that more workers are trying to cheat on mandatory drug tests by their employers. Last year, of the 5.5 million drug screens collected from the American workforce, 31,000 showed signs of being tampered with. The swaps can involve switching one's urine with that of another person or even a pet. That is way up. Tests positive for amphetamines and marijuana are up. Obviously, with the wider acceptance of marijuana use, that has something to do with it, I'm sure. But In all, and this is the eye-popping number, it is a 633% rise in the number of swapped drug tests last year over the year before. 633% increase in the number of people who are cheating on their drug tests at work. Now, for some jobs, that's kind of interesting, but there are others where that is very important and disturbing number. You know, people like drive vehicles for a living, or, you know, school bus drivers. Not that I'm accusing any school bus drivers of doing that. I don't know that. But I mean, there are certain professions where, you know, like airline pilots, you don't want airline pilots cheating on their drug tests, or school bus drivers, or, you know, transit drivers, anything of that kind, or people who operate heavy machinery. There are some jobs where you definitely do not want people cheating on their drug tests, but a 633% rise, pretty incredible. Other big news that you may be interested in this morning. Apparently, McDonald's has now announced they are rolling out a $5 combo value meal. There have been rumors about this for quite some time, that Mickey D's is going to join in the $5 combo meal fray. Apparently, it is, let's see, it's like a chicken nuggets or a chicken sandwich or hamburger, small fries, and drink, $5. Anyway, they've got a $5 combo meal out, but there is a trade-off, apparently, to be had. The common perk at fast food restaurants may be going away. Unlimited beverage refills disappearing from McDonald's locations. So it's a trade-off. You get your $5 value meal, but we're going to take back the unlimited drink refills. A company representative confirmed that over-the-counter refills would be at the discretion of individual restaurant owners. And a lot of diners not happy with the change sparked a strong reaction on social media. One user said, "This is the most American thing ever. Take this away. It's un-American." Free refills. Someone else on social media compared it to a sign of the apocalypse. We're not getting free drink refills at McDonald's anymore. And if McDonald's is taking away free refills, chances are good other chains will likely follow suit. So just prepare yourself. Maybe that perk may be going away. There's always a trade-off, I guess. This is big news. This may be the biggest news of the day. Maybe I should have led off with this. Big news. The Victoria's Secret Fashion Show is back. That's right, this fall, after a four-year hiatus, the newly reimagined fashion show that Victoria's Secret says will reflect who we are today. After facing a slew of controversies over company culture and inclusivity, Victoria's Secret overhauled its image and incorporated more diverse and plus-size models in its campaigns, and the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show will apparently reflect that. But it is coming back this fall. Victoria's Secret Fashion Show. Big, big news. Big, big news. Speaking of fast food, restaurants and that kind of thing, I did see this on the Newswire. Dolly Parton is now working with Krispy Kreme on an all-new collaboration. The company now has Dolly's Southern Sweets Donut Collection available for a limited time. That's right. Dolly Parton's Southern Sweets Donut Collection at Krispy Kreme. Four new flavors: the Dolly Dazzler with strawberry icing and a butterfly candy piece, the Peachy Keen Cobbler-filled donut, the Banana Pudding Pie-filled donut, and a Chocolate Cream Pie donut as well. To promote this new line, on Saturday, Krispy Kreme is offering guests at their shops a free original glazed donut if they come either dressed as Dolly Parton or if you show up and sing one of her hit songs. And I have never been so glad that we do not have a Krispy Kreme in Findlay. That's... I'm kidding, of course. But that's... Wow. Steer clear of Krispy Kreme on Saturday. All of the Dolly Parton wannabes there. And finally... Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, chew on this. Hawaii has been named the least normal U.S. state. According to a new analysis of census data conducted by the Washington Post, they wanted to determine which state best represents America as a whole. They looked at 30 different socioeconomic factors, including race, religion, income, education, jobs, and social issues, and they determined that the least normal state in the U.S. is Hawaii. Alaska is number two. Now, I'm not surprised. I mean, if you think about it, Alaska and Hawaii are far removed from the mainland in you know, the continental United States in terms of distance in both cases. And so the fact that they would be the least normal U.S. states is not necessarily surprising. I do not know what the next least normal state is after Alaska and Hawaii. I just have the top two. The most normal state, according to the Washington Post analysis, Illinois, the most normal state, best representative of America as a whole. Illinois is followed by Florida, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and Michigan, rounding out the top five. So I do not know where Ohio lands on that list. I tried to look it up, but the story is behind a paywall on the Washington Post website. So if you're a subscriber, maybe you can tell us. But I don't have that information. I just have the highlights that were provided on the Newswire. But there you go. I would argue that if you're going to put Michigan in the top five as the most normal states, I got to question the methodology. But that's just me. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the mid-70s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-60s. A new bill making its way through the Ohio legislature would crack down on people who trespass and commit acts of voyeurism with drones.
A bill co-sponsor, Republican Representative Brian Lampton, says there's no state law right now regarding the use of drones over private property.
You don't want some strangers just walking around in your backyard. This is similar, except right now there's nothing wrong with someone floating a drone 10 foot above taking video and pictures.
This bill would give law enforcement the authority to go after someone who flies one on any private property without permission.
ONN's Doug Petcash reporting. Get more in the story on our website. The City of Findlay Street Department tested the city's outdoor warning sirens on Wednesday morning, but you probably didn't hear it. That's because the 16 sirens were each tested separately and for a very short time. The city performed the testing because four of the sirens stopped working when they were sounded during a tornado warning last week. The city says all 16 sirens are working properly, and it believes it was an issue with older radio equipment that caused the four sirens to stop going off on May 7th. Residents can report outdoor warning sirens they don't think are working to the city, and we have the city's contact information in the story on our website. The Hancock Historical Museum's classic movie night is on Friday, and they'll be featuring the 1944 classic Laura.
You have rarely met a girl like Laura. Few women have been so beautiful, so exotic, so dangerous to know.
You're Laura Hunt, aren't you?
Yes.
I'm Shelby Carpenter. Want to dance?
I'm not alone.
Laura is one of the most celebrated 1940s film noir films. The museum's classic movie night is free and open to the public. Historical information is provided before the movie, and guests are welcome to stay for a discussion afterward. The Hancock Historical Museum is located at 422 West Sandusky Street in Findlay. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, for military enthusiasts, this week's 37th annual Findlay Show and Armed Forces Day celebration at the Hancock County Fairgrounds is an event not to be missed. John Cheney is the commander of the Findlay Military Association that is responsible for putting on the show. And John, you know, for those that weren't already aware, this is not only a huge show for Findlay. It's one of the biggest in the area, one of the biggest in the country, from what I understand.
That's correct. We're one of the largest shows of its kind in the United States.
And what is it like planning for an event of that size? Because I know the Findlay Military Association is a relatively small group of individuals who organize and put all of this on.
Well, we'll start our task about, I'll start my task about November and start getting paperwork and such around. And
wow.
Then we'll start at the first of the year, we'll start getting meetings together. And yeah, we've got about 30 members in our group. And we're always striving to ask for more volunteers and patriots that want to come help us honor the great veterans of the United States. But yeah, there's a lot of work goes into it, but it all kind of comes together in the last 3 weeks just before the show.
And it is a labor of love. I know that this is just something that you do because you have this great love for these vehicles, the stories behind them, military members and all of that. I mean, you wouldn't do this if there wasn't a great love for it.
No, I mean, it years ago and 37 years ago, when we first started this, we were the Military Affairs Committee for the Chamber of Commerce. And then after 10 years, we went off and started our own group. But it's all about honoring the veterans. It's a labor love. Absolutely. It's whatever we can do to bring the public out, to let them experience what our veterans went through during hardship times and non-combat times. But yeah, it's just a labor love. Absolutely. We dedicate about half of our year to planning for it, and then we try to put on the best show we can each year.
Now, let's give folks kind of a preview of what will be happening. You're open through the weekend, and Saturday is the big day, but talk a little bit about some of the things that will be happening at the fairgrounds through the rest of the week.
Well, Thursday, that's kind of our early shopping days for the vendors. We'll have people come in from clear across the United States to shop for military vehicle parts and memorabilia and things like that. Friday, we'll start having a little more activities around the fairgrounds. I'm not discouraging anybody from coming out on Thursday, but Friday we'll be having the Mad River Light Artillery firing volleys around here and such. We're going to have a lot of vehicles on display and moving around. But Saturday, yes, absolutely. Saturday is the big day. We'll have the Genoa American Legion Band playing for us. We're going to have opening ceremonies with the Arlington High School Band. We've got a Veterans Award breakfast Saturday morning. We'll have a passing review on 4:30 on Saturday afternoon. We're going to have a World War II battle reenactment at 2:00. And then throughout the day, we're going to have all kinds of little activities going on around. We've got great food trucks out here.
I was going to say there's all kinds of great food and live entertainment as well.
That's correct. And this year again, we've got the Sherman back this year, so the Sherman will be driving around and such, so people will be able to see true history in motion. This is the first year that the Ohio Motor Pool is going to be doing judging vehicles, so we now have the Legacy Building full of vendors as well as pristine military vehicles that are being judged and displayed. Not just the vehicle, but displays around it and such. The American Huey 369 will be back in. They'll be arriving about noon on Friday, and they'll be giving membership flights once again. And they'll be here until about 4:00 on Saturday. So if anybody wants to come out and get a membership flight, I highly recommend you get here in the morning on Saturday and get signed up as soon as possible, because they'll give time slots. They will sell out. I don't like to have people stop in at 3:00 and say, hey, I want to ride the helicopter. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine a great demand for that, because it is a very unique experience, to be sure. And I know we've talked about this in the past. Talked about this before, but some of these vehicles are just have incredible backstories. And I know one of the things that all of the owners love to share those stories when folks come up and view the vehicles, and they can talk with the owners, because there are just some amazing stories behind how people came to acquire these vehicles and what they go through to restore them and keep them in the shape that they are.
Absolutely. In fact, there's several kinds of owners. There are owners who are veterans themselves, so they're driving the vehicle they had when they were during service time and such like that. Hmm. We'll have people who were not veterans, but they want to honor the veterans, so they preserve the vehicles to bring the history back alive for them. It's nothing better to restore a half track. and then have a Korean War veteran walk up and says, I was in one of these, and this is where I used to hide when they shell us, so this is what I used to do. And just to hear the stories from the public is fabulous in itself. And that's a lot of the, most of the owners, all of the owners, I should say, that's what we strive for. We want people to enjoy. It's just like somebody restoring a Corvette, but we're just restoring a Jeep and or we're bringing out a half track or a tank or something like that.
Yeah.
And we like to share the stories and we like them to share their stories with us.
And you mentioned the swap meet is a big part of what you do for the owners and the enthusiasts, because it's not like when you're restoring, a military vehicle really of any kind. You can't just run down to AutoZone and get spare parts. These are highly specialized items that aren't just available everywhere.
That's correct. And they're getting harder and harder to find all the time. So we have right now 185 vendors and over 500 spaces and tables right now. Like I said, we've got vendors that came in for at least 38 states right now. So as we said, we're the largest in the United States right now, and the people flock to this show. Each year we grow and grow and grow, and we hope to continue to grow. And again, it's all for the veterans, and it's all we want the public to come. Please visit us so you can have the experience and you can see what our passion is about.
So it's happening through the weekend. Let's give real quickly the details. Public enters through the fish lock gate like you would for the fair, and you can get admission. You can get admission at the gate, right?
Yes, we'll be parking outside at the fish lock entrance there, parking out in the fields like they do at the fair. You'll come up to the gate. We will have some courtesy golf carts out there in case somebody doesn't want to walk up or such. We can come out and get them. But you come up to the gate, it's $10 per adult, $5 for children 6 to 17, and children under 6 accompanied by adult are free. So come on up. And we do offer a 3-day pass also for $20. If anybody's interested in coming back all 3 days.
All right. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Findlay Show and the Armed Forces Day celebration at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. And once again, John Chaney is commander of the Findlay Military Association. John, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly appreciate it. Have a great show.
Thank you very much. Hopefully you'll stop out and see us as well.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
The United Way of Hancock County in the spotlight this morning, and CEO Angela Dabosky is with us. Just wrapped up the spring Days of Caring. This is twice a year that you do the Days of Caring, right?
Right. A couple of years ago, we made it a twice a year event just because people were asking for more ways to get involved, more volunteerism. And we know that there's spring projects that we have and there's fall, and they're very different.
So how awesome is that, that people actually want to help out more often, that you can do this multiple times a year?
It is. Last year, we had over 12,500 volunteer hours that we placed. That's not somebody going back a second time. Mm-hmm. It is one of the largest per capita in our region, and we're pretty proud of our Hancock County residents for jumping in and getting involved.
Yeah, so wrap that up for us. How did Days of Caring go in the spring?
It was a flurry of activity. We had over 900 people in our community doing dozens and dozens and dozens of projects for not just nonprofits, but we had civic, we did county parks and mulching, we did things for the faith-based community, we did things just across the area to make a huge impact. Over $120,000 of capacity if these nonprofits and organizations had to pay for those services.
Right.
So it's capacity dollar-wise, so things that they wouldn't be able to do, but it is also engagement. So you go to a park and you get engaged in making it a better place for your kids to go. You take your kids there more regularly. You're invested in our community differently. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to challenge people, that whether you participated last week or not, find a way to make that investment through volunteerism, through advocacy. Obviously, we'll have campaigns starting again in the fall. But we would love to have them be a donor as well. But we have multiple ways for you to explore and find your fit. My husband is an engineer, and the way he wants to serve is completely different than the way I want to serve.
Sure.
So we have a lot of those, just a variety of ways and mm-hmm. and avenues for people to explore on our website.
Yeah. It's really easy to, again, when we talk, especially when you talk with the United Way, to talk about fundraising and, you know, those sorts of things. But mm-hmm. again, that advocacy is in many ways even more important for all the reasons that you just mentioned.
Yeah. And people come out of projects like this saying, I didn't know we had that problem. Mm-hmm. I went and I served somewhere in our community. I didn't know Finley had. I didn't know that Hancock County had a problem with homelessness, with food insecurity. You know, we have 2 out of 5 kids in our community don't have enough food to eat. Mm-hmm. And if you're not experiencing it, it can be difficult to relate. So this gives them an opportunity to do that.
And a lot of times people recognize needs that they didn't know were there. Again, you talk about serving the faith-based community or things that organizations can't necessarily always afford to do. Recognizing that need, maybe they get involved with their own church or their, you know, organizations in similar ways.
So it has a multiplier effect sure. across our community, yeah. which we are proud to be at the forefront of.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the Days of Caring, in terms of the dollar amount, we've talked about this before. These are projects that these organizations, these groups would have to pay for some other way. Either they would go undone or somebody would have to be paid to do them. So it's a huge relief on their budget.
It is, but it's also a boost of encouragement to these nonprofit leaders who are serving our community, right? Mm-hmm. It can be really tiring to day in, day out, go to work and help. It's satisfying, but it can be tiring too.
Yeah.
To have somebody come along and say, I care enough to give you my time and support you, it's a real boost to their efforts, to the enthusiasm with which they tackle their chores every day. So it really is bigger than a multiplier effect. It's a come alongside me, we got your back kind of thing.
So a huge shout out to all of those who helped make the Days of Caring happen this year.
Absolutely. We have multiple companies that said, here, take some of our employees and team building exercises. Just fantastic things to be able to witness and see.
And for those who are interested in getting more involved in the community, this is obviously one of the big things you do, but there are all kinds of ways of doing that, all kinds of needs within the community, and the United Way is a good place to start to learn about what is needed.
It is. You can go to our website at uwhancock.org, and we have a variety of things, anything from a one-time commitments or something once a week for a whole year. Yeah. So you can explore based on what your interests are, but also what your time allows and what do you have a passion for? How do you want to serve?
Again, Angela Dabosky, CEO of the United Way of Hancock County, with us this morning in the spotlight. And once again, the website is
uwhancock.org.
Angela, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A teenager in Canada is facing a hefty fine for using his phone behind the wheel of his car. Now, obviously, it's very dangerous to, you know, be on your phone while you are driving. I mean, that's why it is against the law, both in this country as it is in Canada, as it should be. I mean, this is very dangerous, and we need to curb distracted driving as much as possible. However, there are some mitigating circumstances in this case that make the story a bit odd. You see, Mason Prima was using the McDonald's app to complete his order in the McDonald's drive-thru at the time. He was in the McDonald's drive-thru using the McDonald's app. His bad luck, there was a cop behind him in line, and sure enough, the cop pulled him over for using his phone while he was behind the wheel. Mason said at first he thought either he was just kidding around, or maybe he might get a warning, a reminder that it's, you know, dangerous to use your phone while driving. But he didn't think he was going to get cited given the circumstances. But he was. He was actually cited for using his phone in the McDonald's drive-thru. He said, hey, man, I was just trying to use my reward points. But as it turns out, it was a very expensive lunch to the tune of $500. $500, the fine. He also, in his defense, said that the restaurant, the person who was taking the order, actually asked him to use the app to complete the order. So Mason says he is going to fight the fine in court. The end of July is when his court date is set. Again, I'm all for these distracted driving laws and making it illegal to use your phone while you're behind the wheel, but that does seem to be a bit extreme. So, I think I'm on his side on this one. Elsewhere in the broken news, you know, money can't buy you everything. A billionaire in Australia, Gina Reinhart is her name. She wanted to get an unflattering portrait of her removed from the National Gallery in Australia. The piece was created by artist Vincent Namajira, depicts Ms. Reinhart with a poorly defined chin, a non-existent lower lip, and a shocked expression on her face. And it is intentionally painted her in a bad light, literally. Because apparently she has taken some very controversial stands on Aboriginal issues in Australia. And the exhibit, according to the artist, is described as taking a wry look at the politics of history, power, and leadership. Ms. Reinhart was unhappy with the piece and wanted it taken down. She donated $10,000 to the gallery and then made the request for them to take the portrait down. I'll give you $10,000. Just take the portrait down. The museum denied the request. They took the $10,000, but they denied the request. I will not acquiesce to your request. But thank you for the $10,000 donation. Sometimes money can't buy you everything. Let's see here. This is from the domestic file in the broken news out of Hollywood. And it's really, when you think about it, it's surprising we don't have more Hollywood stories in the broken news because they're kind of weird. You know, Holly weird, you've heard that expression. Well, a movie producer is going to prison for burglarizing homes that belong to his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. A judge sentenced Raymond Boudreau, is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, he's been sentenced to 3.5 years in jail and ordered to pay $200,000 in restitution to the victim. Again, he was burglarizing homes belonging to his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. He pleaded guilty to stealing more than $1 million worth of property from the homes. He declined to comment at his sentencing, but his attorney says he has accepted responsibility. By the way, Mr. Boudreau produced the 2020 film Bill and Ted Face the Music. So when his attorney says he has accepted responsibility, is he talking for the burglary or is he talking about that film? That's what I really want him to accept responsibility for. I mean, anyway. I know, it's kind of a long way to go for that joke. By the way, speaking of exes and boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, I'll tell you, it's when you get these love triangles involved, all kinds of crazy things can happen. A Texas woman is headed to prison for trying to hire a hitman to kill her boyfriend's other lover. Michelle Murphy from Bedford, which is a suburb of Dallas, pleaded guilty in federal court. She's 58 years old, and according to the complaint, sent about $10,000 in Bitcoin to someone she thought would do the job, would kill her boyfriend's other lover. But the person she paid went to the feds instead. Agents set up a sting and caught Ms. Murphy and her man at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. She confessed And that led to the 9-year prison sentence that she received this week. Prosecutors say this is the first time that they have had a murder for hire case involving cryptocurrency. I can't imagine why her boyfriend would have taken on another lover. Why is she? He might have been seeing someone else on the side. I mean, it's hard to believe that he would fool around on this person who seems to be so stable and well-balanced. Yeah. And finally, in the broken news this morning, speaking of Texas and things like that, you get cowboys in Texas, and you often see the cowboys out on the range trying to round up the cattle, lassoing them on horseback. But when you are chasing a loose cow in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, you need to get more creative. A video obtained by local news reporters in Pennsylvania is making the rounds on social media, shows a cow running down the street, which is a little unusual to begin with, but a man in the passenger seat of a Jeep giving chase, trying to lasso the cow from the passenger seat of a Jeep driving down the road chasing the cow. Unfortunately, we don't know if he was successful since the video clip ends after the man makes the first attempt to slip the lasso over the head of the cow and misses. Whoever told him that the Jeep idea would work apparently steered him wrong. I know, that's bad. I apologize for the bad puns today. But there you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glentz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is an interesting question. Is there a difference between taking a trip and taking a vacation? New survey of 2,000 adults, 80% of Americans say that there is a difference between a trip and a vacation. 53% say a vacation, the main objective of a vacation is relaxation. 32% say a trip has a special purpose. You'd be going to a reunion or a wedding or something along those lines. It's a special purpose for a trip as opposed to just escaping for relaxation, a little R&R. That would be a vacation. Some also say a trip is shorter than a vacation. But regardless of which one you are taking, 60% of those in the survey anticipate driving to their destinations this year. There is nothing better than cruising on the highway with the windows down, sun shining, and music playing, especially when you're surrounded by loved ones. This according to Julie Arrowsmith of G6 Hospitality, which commissioned the survey. 53% say a vacation is defined as travel for relaxation. 32% say a trip is a travel for purpose. And 59% say that arriving at the hotel is when vacation mode officially turns on. When you officially switch into vacation mode is when you get to the hotel. 59%. Travelers. Oh, here's the breakdown. 48%. These are trips. 48% are going to family and friend reunions. 36% this summer will be exploring a new city. 60% say they're just looking forward to kicking back and relaxing. Interesting. So what are you doing this summer? Are you taking a trip? Or are you taking a vacation? Or maybe you're taking both. That would be even better. It is a throwback Thursday. You remember a few years ago when a group of online disruptors calling themselves Wall Street Bets set out to squeeze the rich hedge fund investment managers on Wall Street who were counting on stocks like GameStop to fail by scooping up the stock for next to nothing and driving up the price instead. Remember when that made headlines? Everybody was talking about Wall Street Bets and these hedge fund managers that got hammered by this online meme stock craze. Well, believe it or not, in case you missed it, the meme stocks were back earlier this week. GameStop stock shot up 135% at the beginning of the week, and AMC Theaters, that was another one of the big meme stocks, that shot up over 100% early in the week. Now, in recent days, those stocks have started to come back down, but once again, flustering short sellers who are still out there betting on price declines for these stocks. But unlike the frenzy that Wall Street Bets created back then, strategists say this fresh burst of enthusiasm is far from the madness of 3 years ago. Back in February of 2022, we spoke with Wall Street Journal columnist Spencer Jacob about his book taking a deep dive into what happened and how it happened, called The Revolution That Wasn't. It is today's Throwback Thursday. Spencer, it's easy to see the appeal of this market revolt, if you will. The uprising of the little guy is always a popular narrative.
It is. You love to see a David and Goliath story, and there is a lot to see. I mean, it is a crazy story. If I had written a fiction book with these characters, that my editor would tell me to tone it down. They're just like made for Hollywood. It is a wild, wacky story, and some people did get rich, and some people lost staggering amounts of money.
And
so, you know, it happened, but not exactly the way that the headlines made it sound at the time.
Exactly, because in many cases, it was in fact those small investors that got fleeced.
Totally. I mean, this is the overarching issue with Wall Street, is that when small investors get very excited, whether it's dot-com stocks or it's this or whatever, and are very active in the market, those are great times for Wall Street, because most of Wall Street is just middlemen who like it when you show up with your money and you think you're clever. They're not really taking a risk at all, or not much of a risk. You have hedge funds who usually do pretty well. In this case, a couple of them really, really did not do well. That one of the best paid men in America, basically, lost for his investors almost $7 billion in a few days on this. And lots of other people lost money, too. So it's not like there weren't victims on Wall Street, and mm-hmm. certainly not like there weren't winners on social media. But it's a little bit more complicated and a little bit of a darker story.
So who were the real winners out of all of this?
The real winners were the people who take your trades, the people who process your trades, the app-based broker Robinhood, for example, where they make almost all their money through selling people's trades, mm-hmm. stock and option trades, to market makers. All they care about is how much you trade and how active you are. They don't care if the trade is successful. That's not how they get paid. They're not, you know, people who get paid on the front end are happy when you're active. People who get paid on the back end are happy when you do well. And they were very much front-end people. And then there are people who they sold their trades to, companies like Citadel Securities and Virtu Financial and Susquehanna that process all these trades in their computers and take little fractions of a cent of each trade and then pay the broker for the privilege. They had a great time. And even people who do take risks on Wall Street, most of them did fine. Most of them either, you know, jumped on the bandwagon. Some funds there's one fund that made $1 billion. Just, they said, hey, we made $1 billion and we were just in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And they just, you know, because they just were there, and executives cashed out too with crazy packages.
Now, and by the way, those hedge fund managers that were betting on the stock to fail all along, did they actually lose anything? Because despite the run-up for a time, the stock ultimately is going in the direction that everybody expected it to, and that didn't really change the fortunes of the company as a whole.
Well, a lot of them did lose money, and this is the thing that, like, people say, like, oh, they're betting on this. They want this company to fail. They're trying to make it fail. And that's not really how it works. They're betting that the share price is going to go down. If it fails, that's great, but they can't make it fail. They're just making a bet.
Mm-hmm.
And because this went up so much, if you are a short seller, that's the thing. That's what the people on these message boards grasped, is that your losses are infinite. So they had to, you know, get out with their tails between their legs. They really did lose money. They,
mm-hmm.
The fact that it went down later was no consolation to them, because they were long gone by the time the thing began to fall. As a matter of fact, new hedge funds kind of got into it and thought they could make money and also got blown up.
So I wonder, as it turns out in the end, was this just a good old-fashioned market manipulation like we've seen many times before, maybe using a different forum, taking a slightly different form, but still a classic pump-and-dump scheme?
No, so, I mean, to be clear, it wasn't. And I'll tell you, one of the people I spoke with, lots of people for the story, and one of the most interesting people I spoke with was Jordan Belfort, better known as the Wolf of Wall Street, because I wanted to get his insights into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it perfectly. He said, this was a pump without a dump. Because they were supposed to hang on. So the people who still really believe in this, many of them still own the stock. You know, they weren't manipulating anybody. They were manipulated maybe, but they weren't manipulating anybody. And so there wasn't. That's the thing that that's odd about this, is there was some illegality in terms of people using bots to go onto message boards and things like that, but not really. Nobody really broke the law in this whole story. It was just an epic, crazy fight. And a lot of people just, you know, sort of wish they hadn't been in it.
Well, and that actually kind of leads to the question that a lot of people were asking in the aftermath is, if none of this was technically illegal, should it be? And the book examines this in greater detail, The Benefit of Hindsight. Where does the blame lie? Many people have pointed to online brokerages that make it far too easy for people to get into areas of investing that they are just not knowledgeable enough about and are unprepared for.
You know, it's very hard. You criticize one of these brokerages, and there's one in particular that was at the center of all this, and they say, you're just trying to hold people back. We're democratizing finance. You're not democratizing finance. You're making a lot of money. That's what you're doing. Finance is already democratized. I mean, you can for very little money get exposure to the stock market. Far too few people do. There's a real retirement crisis in this country, and young people are not very good at saving for the future, because it's just in their minds, it's so far away. So it's a good thing that young people are opening accounts, and maybe some of them learn their lesson and they'll sort of get on a more sustainable path towards building a nest egg. But they're sort of the ones to blame, and then they didn't break the law. The law allows them to do this. It allows them to build a beautiful, addictive, alluring app. But I wish that there were more guardrails, and the rules that might come as a result of this are more likely to be sort of generals fighting the last war, or trying to control the people who are unpopular in this story. Because despite the fact that they lost so much money, short sellers were the ones who are unpopular. You know, and they're just trying to make money like anybody else on Wall Street. But they're the ones who are likely to sort of to face tighter rules, which is kind of actually counterproductive, as I explain in the book.
And I guess circling back to what the initial appeal of all of this was, you know, sticking it to the big guy and what you were talking about, the way people feel about hedge fund managers, is there really a way for ordinary investors to beat the pros, or should ordinary investors not even try?
Yeah, here's the thing. The same technologies that made all this possible allow you to do this. That is the ironic thing, is that you can really stick it to the man, because if you look at the long-term performance of professional money managers, hedge funds, mutual funds, whatever, 80 to 90% of them in the long run fail to beat the market, which is crazy, right? They're the professionals and they fail to beat the market.
Yeah.
Now you can maybe not beat the market, but you can be the market for very little cost today. Basically, you just buy a bunch of index funds that you feel safe with, that you're safe holding, that are appropriate for your risk. You pay a teeny tiny amount to hold them these days. It used to be really expensive. And you just sit tight and you don't panic when you see the Dow down 1,000 points, and don't jump on the next dumb technology, and just kind of sit tight and be disciplined, and you're going to beat those guys. You can beat Wall Street. And you're going to cost Wall Street money, too. They don't like it when you do that because they hardly make any money off of you. So if you want to stick it to the man and you want to beat the man, it's a little boring. It's not as exciting as blowing up a hedge fund, but there you go. I mean, I've just told you the secret.
I was going to say, that sounds very familiar with the advice we've long heard. It's not as sexy, but it's smarter. Spencer Jacob is author of The Revolution That Wasn't, a fascinating examination of that GameStop stock squeeze that captured everybody's attention. Spencer, do you have a website in conjunction with the book that we can guide folks to?
I do. My last name is spelled a little bit unusually. It's J-A-K-A-B, so it's SpencerJacob.com, and I can be followed on social media.
Spencer, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
From February of 2022, our conversation with Wall Street Journal columnist Spencer Jacob about his book, The Revolution That Wasn't. It is today's Throwback Thursday. And with that, we put a wrap on today's podcast. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. And now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow to finish up the week.